overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign for Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posted in! It's a rocket of a shot!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
It's chipped around the boards again. Hard rim there, kept in by Morrissey. Nice job. He winds up, slap shot, scores! Josh Morrissey with a howitzer, and we're tied at one.
Welcome to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve. It's Ezra Ginsberg filling in for Drew Mandel, who's on vacation, and I'm joined by Sean Assor. We've got a great show for you coming up at 6:30. We're going to be joined by Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. At 7 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Bill West. The Jets play the Penguins tomorrow night. He writes for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. And at 7:30, we're going to be joined by Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. As I mentioned, you're listening to NHL This Week. I'm Ezra Ginsberg. Sean, we're obviously going to get right into last night's game between the Jets and the Sharks.
Okay.
If that's okay.
No, it's perfectly fine.
The Jets losing by a score of 3-2. Mark Scheifele scoring that late goal to keep his heater going. What were your thoughts on that game? The Jets now 2-2 on this homestand. They've got two games left against Pittsburgh and Calgary. San Jose, we know they've had a lot of success against the Jets this year. They're now 3-0 against the Jets. What did you think about the way the Jets played and what their playoff chances are looking like now?
Obviously, playoff chances are a little bit slim as a tough loss where they couldn't secure at least a single point as they move forward. I thought the game yesterday was just a continuation of an absolutely incredible style of play that we've seen over the past maybe 2 weeks or so now, where the Jets have just been bringing the physicality, the tenacity, the work ethic, and just a real attention to detail that has somewhat been lacking throughout the season. But last night, if you were to watch that game, Ezzy, you turn that game on, you have never seen an NHL game before, you don't know any of the history moving of the season moving up to this game, you would think that both of those teams are of equal, or at least a little, you know, to a certain degree, very similar in talent, in work ethic, in ability, in skill. I mean, the Jets took it to a very good San Jose team and were unable to secure the victory. But I think they played an absolutely excellent game against a very excellent opponent.
Well, and this is the division champion right now, right?
Yeah.
Division leader, I should say, but most likely they're going to win the division this year, and the Anaheim Ducks might have something to say about that, as would the Edmonton Oilers. But I agree with you, Sean, and if you look at that stretch of the game between the midway point of the first period and the early portion of the second period, the San Jose Sharks didn't have a shot on net, mm-hmm. and Munsey was mentioning that on the broadcast. And when you're talking about the Sharks, I know they've had some problems scoring goals this year. Joe Thornton's only got 6, even though he's having no trouble picking up the assist. He picked up number 1000 last night. But this team can score goals, and I thought that the Jets, as you mentioned, did play very well defensively. And you're right, this game did have a bite to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Chris Thorburn and Michael Haley dropping the gloves, but you had Dustin Byfuglien taking out basically whoever he had in his sights. At one point, he took out 3 different players, including one of his own, but I agree with you, and you know the way the Jets have played here, I thought that they really carried over the way they played on the weekend, mm-hmm. in wins against St. Louis and Colorado. And I want to talk about specifically, Sean, the way Josh Morrissey played, because Josh Morrissey was paired up with Jacob Trouba, and we've seen Morrissey and Trouba paired up before, but for the majority of the season, we've seen Josh Morrissey paired up with Dustin Byfuglien on the second pair, and then you had Enstrom and Trouba on the top pair. Josh Morrissey not only picked up a goal last night, but he was very good defensively, playing just under 20 minutes. What did you think of the way Josh Morrissey played not only last night, but the way he's been playing for the last 2 or 3 weeks?
You know, Drew leaves the show, and then our synergy really shines, as he, because I told Rory I had an audio clip I wanted to play about Morrissey. I know we have some of his post-game audio, but he just continues to impress me. First of all, I can watch him skate all day long. He is just beyond graceful on the ice. Like, his edge work, his ability to move and to get himself out of trouble based on his skating is so impressive. And then you take into consideration what I believe is one of his greatest qualities this year is his active stick and the way he is able to disrupt shooters, passers, playmakers in general, just with how smart he is at deflecting pucks either out of play or away from the intended receiver. And then, of course, you see the sequence with his goal, where he keeps the puck in three times, makes an amazing play at the blue line, not once but twice. Nick Ehlers does some razzle-dazzle, keeps that whole play alive, drops it to Morrissey, a real bouncer. Morrissey has to kick it to his skate, uses his skating to kind of separate himself, and then head up the whole way, fires that missile past Arundel. Rory, if you can cue up that clip, there's a really interesting thing that he talks about with Paul Edmonds, where Paul asks him about the goal in the first intermission, in the walk-off, and so we're sitting here producing the broadcast, and he just listen to the way he explains this goal.
In that situation as a defenseman, because you don't have a lot of time, are you looking just to put that shot on the net, or are you trying to pick a corner on there?
Well, you know, there's a lot of times you're just trying to get it through the first layer and you know, hopefully through the second layer if there's a D-man in front or your own guy screening. But on that one there, like I said, I'm not sure. I think my right winger, who was supposed to be covering me, was actually behind the net with the puck, rimmed it around, and I picked it up. So that particular one, I actually had a little more time, looked up, was able to take kind of two steps inside, and they had kind of the screen going in front, and I saw their forward kind of drop down, and I tried to pick that sort of glove side of the net, and you know, got all of it, and like I said, fortunately it went in.
Now, does that sound like a 21-year-old rookie talking the way he broke down that play there and saw who was in the right and wrong position, where his opposition is in relation to where he should be in the shooting position? I mean, he's a former Scholastic Player of the Year in the CHL. This guy continues to impress beyond his years.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds like a regular 21-year-old, Sean. You're right, and I think that's why Jets head coach Paul Maurice continues to trust Josh Morrissey in important situations. That's why he's able to play 18, 19, 20 plus minutes a game, and that's why he puts him out there on the PK. He hasn't got a lot of power play time, and there's a reason for that, because you have a lot of other talented players in front of him. But you're right. I mean, I think the way Josh Morrissey thinks the game is going to really help him in the future, because as we know, he's not the biggest defenseman, but he likes the physical aspect of the game. And I think especially when you're a smaller defenseman, you have to learn how to use your body in relation to attacking players.
Yep.
And also when you're trying to chase down pucks in that situation and get a shot on net. And it was a beautiful shot on net, and Arundel didn't really have any chance on it. You know, there could have been a little bit of traffic in front of him, but it was a really good opportunity. And then later in the third period, he had a partial breakaway, and then he actually caused, I forget who it was on the San Jose Sharks, to take the penalty there.
Paul, Paul Martin, I believe.
Oh, that's right. It was Paul Martin, so he took the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
It was a tripping penalty. So, you know, Josh Morrissey, that was arguably his best game of the year.
I agree.
And he's been very solid all year, whether he's been paired up with Dustin Byfuglien or whether he's been paired up with Jacob Trouba. So I thought he really stood out. And when you look at how the Jets played, we talked about it. I mean, they don't get the 2 points, and it's unfortunate because that was a key 2 points. Mm-hmm. And now when you're in a situation against the Pittsburgh Penguins now where you really have to win this game, fifth game of the six-game homestand, and you've already lost 2 games, and we kind of talked about it before this homestand, the Jets really needed to win a minimum of 4 of these games. Mm-hmm. Most likely, you'd prefer to win 5 of these games. So you're facing the defending Stanley Cup champions tomorrow night, and it's going to be a difficult test. So what did you think about the way Connor Hellebuyck played? That was his 11th straight start, and the game was tied going into the third period. But what have you thought about how he's really responded to playing so many games in such a short period of time?
Yeah, I think the break was really good for Connor Hellebuyck, allowed him to kind of reset mentally. And after everything that happened with Andre Pavlik, allowed him to clear his head a little bit and kind of reset. And now we've seen, listen, the guy has never lacked in confidence. He's never lacked in his belief in himself. It's just nice to see maybe a little bit of the results starting to show, and I thought he played pretty well. He made some pretty big timely saves. That goal, the Joe Pavelski goal, I mean, Byfuglien kind of loses him in front. It's a scramble off a really nice original save, and then Joe Pavelski, you know, he terrorizes goalies in front of their net for years now. Like, him scoring within 10 feet of the crease is nothing new. So, you know, Byfuglien, maybe he could have done a little less puck watching, being a little bit more aware, because Connor Hellebuyck really has no chance on that play unless it's a miraculous save. But I thought he locked it down and he played really well. And, you know, that breakaway goal, say what you can about that. You stop that, it's huge.
It's a breakaway.
Exactly. It's a breakaway. Yeah. Mikhail Bodker knows how to score goals in the NHL.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I thought Hellebuyck was very solid. And I want to talk about Andrei Pavlik and Connor Hellebuyck more next segment, because when you talk about Michael Hutchinson, he hasn't had a start in quite some time now. And I think we're expecting Connor Hellebuyck to get the majority of the starts. But at some point, maybe next week when you're in back-to-back situation, you give Michael Hutchinson a start. But certainly the way Connor Hellebuyck is playing right now, he could have had a second shutout against the Colorado Avalanche if it wasn't for a late goal with, what, 15 seconds left. So he's arguably playing the best hockey of his career. You know, it's really funny, though, the way the Jets have played against the Pacific Division. Maybe not funny, but bad is another word. 5-10-1 now against the Pacific Division, which is in contrast to the way the Jets have played against the Central this year. 16-8-1 against teams in the Central. But, Sean, the Jets have a combined 0-7-0 record now against the Sharks, the Oilers, and the Ducks. Lucky for them, if the Jets do squeak into the playoffs, they're most likely going to play Chicago or Minnesota. But it's unbelievable. They have Calgary coming up on Saturday. They just can't seem to beat teams in the Pacific.
It's tough. And, you know, you look at the teams you've just named off. Those are high-quality teams with some high-quality firepower. And what's been plaguing the Jets a lot this season is goaltending and defense. And when you're taking on high-flying teams with the ability to score as much as the Pacific Division, I mean, you're asking, it's a tall task from a young team. I mean, but there's one thing I wanted to talk about before we move on from last night, and it was the military appreciation aspect of last night. And the 1948 Olympic gold medalist Roy Forbes, who dropped the ceremonial puck drop. Now, I don't know if you guys saw this, but, you know, he was in his wheelchair. He's 94 years old.
It was awesome.
And
if you didn't see it, you should check out the video.
It's amazing.
Because it was a special moment before the game.
It really is. And so everyone's applauding this man to drop the puck from his wheelchair. And he kind of like motions, like he waves his hand and everyone's thinking like, what's going on? And then he stands, like, you know, he wants to stand up and drop the puck. And you just see the smile on Blake Wheeler's face, Joe Pavelski, and then the crowd gets into it. And it was like almost a tear-jerking moment for me. It was special to watch.
You almost get the feeling that maybe the power of Crappie was coming in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I mean, if you didn't get goosebumps watching that last night, and, I mean, you know, hats off and a round of applause to, you know, everybody in the military, because, you know, they have one of the hardest jobs. And, you know, they're fighting so we can have the freedoms that we have, right? Let's head to break right now, Sean. When we come back, we're going to continue that conversation about Connor Hellebuyck, how much he's been playing, 11 straight games. We're going to talk about how many starts we think he's going to get here from now until the end of the season. We're also going to talk about Andrei Pavlik's injury, because it looked like he was maybe coming back sometime in the next week. Now it looks like he probably won't play again this year. You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Second segment. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Sean Assor. Drew Mundell is somewhere, not in Winnipeg. I don't really care. You know, one stat that I thought was interesting that we didn't talk about in the first segment, Sean, is that the Jets failed to score three or more goals for the first time in 9 games last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's really incredible. And, you know, they picked up that late goal, so they still got 2. But that offense of the Jets, it's unbelievable how red hot it's been. And we saw how many goals were scored last time the Jets and Penguins played, and we're going to preview that game coming up at 7 o'clock with Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
Yeah,
but it was pretty incredible. I think you got to give Aaron Dell a lot of credit. You know, going into the season, a lot of people didn't think that he was good enough to be the backup. He used to play for the University of North Dakota. He was excellent. He was one of the reasons why that was a low-scoring game. He made some incredible saves, one on Adam Lowry, which was a highlight reel save.
The Patrick Laine one-timer with about a minute left. If that's elevated, that's in the net.
He's a good goalie. I think he's a really shown good that goalie. Not only can he be a backup goaltender in the NHL, maybe he has a future as a number one goaltender.
Yeah, usually Dells just give me trouble in the laptop department, but now it's in the net minding as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't know about that, Sean, because I use a MacBook. But
I switched to a Mac because of that.
I want to switch over to talking about Andrei Pavlik right now. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, it was revealed that Andrei Pavlik underwent a knee scope, and he was going to be out of the lineup for 2 to 3 weeks, maybe longer. I want to play Paul Maurice's comments here first, and then I want to talk about Andrei Pavlik and whether or not he's played his last game as a Winnipeg Jet.
What can you tell us about Andrei Pavlik?
So he had a scope done yesterday on his knee. I'm sorry, this morning on his knee. Went well. The normal window is 2 to 3 weeks for a player. When you get to a goaltender, you have to expand that window. Just the movements, but it went well. So we'll say 2 to 3, but I won't be lying to you if it's longer.
There's a report that he's shut down for the season. Is that accurate?
No, okay. Not at all. It's 2 to 3, but it's a goalie. So I can't tell you. Those windows are just bigger because he has to be able to get down into the butterfly. He's got to be able to push across and be strong with that. So it may be 2, it may be 4.
You've carried 3 goalies for a while.
Yeah.
You know, for a variety of reasons. Will you look at Eric Comrie over this little stretch, do you think?
No.
He won't be recalling him right now?
No.
Paul, you said last week that Andre was ready to come back. You were going to make one of the two goaltenders. Did he get re-injured after that?
No, he just didn't get through the workout comfortably and decided that he didn't want to risk it.
Given Andre's injury and contract status, and possibly he's played his last game with this team. How will you kind of look back on Andre's time?
I would wait till we got to the point that was definite, and then I'll have an answer for you.
You wouldn't rule out playing him again this season?
No.
No.
That was Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking to the media yesterday about Andrei Pavlik. And, you know, Sean, this has been a very weird year for Andrei Pavlik. He starts the season off thinking he might be the backup goaltender to Connor Hellebuck, and then he plays the majority of the season with the Manitoba Moose. Then he gets called up kind of midway through the season and, you know, starts, I think it was 8 consecutive games, something like that. He plays pretty well. His numbers on the season aren't very good. In 8 games, he won 4, lost 4, goals against average 3.55, save percentage of 888. You know, it looked like last week, you know, Andrei Pavlik was saying, you know, he felt good, he might be coming back soon, and Paul Maurice was kind of saying that, you know, we have to wait and see. It's a day-to-day situation. And then yesterday they come out and say that Andrei Pavlik is out for 2 to 3 weeks and he might be out for the season. And if you do the math, 2 to 3 weeks, you know, you're still in March and there's a chance that maybe he comes back and he's the third goaltender behind Michael Hutchinson and Connor Hellebuck. What do you make of this whole situation? And do you think there's any chance that Andrei Pavlik ever plays for the Jets again?
I don't. I don't see it happening, especially because Maurice wasn't... He wasn't concrete with his timeline. I know it's hard to establish that with an injury, but he said 2 to 3 weeks for a player, potentially 4 for a goalie, meaning that it's open to, you know, well, man, now it's 4.5, and now it's 5. So, you know, Andre's done for the season. It, like you said, it's been a really weird year for the Czech Republic goaltender. I mean, he starts the preseason, gets a shutout. Then he's demoted to the Moose, where he is essentially termed a backup to a developing goaltender in Eric Comrie. We hit a wall here in Winnipeg. He gets recalled, plays, like you said, the 8 games, post the whatever numbers, the 888 save percentage and the 4-4 record.
By the way, it was January 17th when Andrei Pavlik was recalled. That's when Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson were both struggling.
And then he gets, you know, he gets hurt. He pulls himself out of the game versus Minnesota. And then, you know, we're on schedule and he's recovering. And then, you know, we do the show from the MTS Center on game days. And Andrew Brown, who does the technical setup there, says he saw Andrei Pavlik getting the work done. And then Andrei Pavlik says he feels good. He passes his on-ice physical. But then the off-ice, Paul Maurice says he didn't pass. And now we're taking a step back. And now this scope and this surgery. And it's just, it feels like we're kind of wandering around a maze and there's no clear direction as to where we're going to get out of this, like, this crazy endeavor that we've embarked on.
I agree with you, Sean, and we'll let the conspiracy theorists, you know.
Trevor Kidd is a big supporter of the conspiracy.
Yeah, and, you know, he's a former NHL goaltender and I'm not, so he has the right to do that. But we knew that the Jets were most likely not going to send Andre Pavlik down to the Moose, and they were going to keep him up if he was healthy, and that's because they weren't going to send Michael Hutchinson down to the Moose because they need to expose a goaltender in the expansion draft. So the timing was a little suspect, but hey, it looks like Andre Pavlik is not going to play for the rest of the season, and we know that he doesn't factor into the long-term plan. So it's unfortunate for Andre Pavlik in the sense that he wants another NHL contract.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, that, you know, it's unfortunate for him because this is a guy who's literally playing for his livelihood right now. And to be shut down for the season doesn't really give him the opportunity, not even to showcase himself in the NHL, but maybe overseas or somewhere, you know, in Europe or in the minor leagues. So, yeah, like you were saying, it's more so a tough blow for him. You know, the team has Hellebuck and they can ride him to the very end if need be, but more so for Andre Pavlik, it's an unfortunate situation for sure. He's been a workhorse for the Jets. You know, the results haven't always been there, but he's been the guy for 6 years now.
I agree with you, Sean. I personally hope that, you know, Andre Pavlik is able to get another NHL contract, and if not, maybe he goes and plays overseas and gets a contract with a KHL team or another league, because I do think that even though it didn't work out for him here in Winnipeg, he is a talented guy. I want to talk about Connor Hellebuck now, Sean. Sure. We've got a few minutes here, and then we're going to be joined by Mike Halford, co-lead writer and editor for NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. He also co-hosts Curtain Blog Radio on TSN 1040 in Vancouver, so we're going to talk about the Canucks with him as well. Connor Hellebuck has now started 11 straight games, and especially in the last three games, he's been very sharp. His save percentages, Sean, in the last three games, .931 last night against San Jose, .957 against Colorado on Saturday, and then Friday night, it was obviously a 1.00 against St. Louis. In the last 11 games, he has a record of 5-3-2, and he's got a .914 save percentage, 2.54 GAA, and a shutout. And he almost had two shutouts, as we talked about during the first segment. So my question for you, Sean, is how many starts does Connor Hellebuck get with 15 games remaining in the season? And does Michael Hutchinson get one of those starts next week when the Jets play,
I believe it's two back-to-back,
two games back-to-back against the Devils and the Predators?
I think this is a really, really important part of Connor Hellebuck's development because these are very meaningful games down the stretch. I mean, the Jets are essentially fighting for their lives, and be it that they're not in the playoffs and they probably won't make the postseason, these are as close to playoff games as you can get for a young and developing netminder right now. Every shot is important. Every minute of every game you have to be on. So regardless of, I think he gets at least 13. I think they ride him. Maybe he'll wear down or have a bad game, and they'll get Michael Hutchinson in there. I don't think they have very much faith in Michael Hutchinson. I think that he hasn't really shown that he can be a legitimate starter or even a backup that starts a game for a full 60. He comes in relief when need be, but I feel that they're going to run this guy because what's the season they've been preaching development, right? Growth and development. So what better way to put a guy into meaningful games than when you're literally your season's life is on the line?
Yeah, I agree with you, Sean. I think he's most likely going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 14 of the starts. I think Michael Hutchinson will start one of those games, most likely Tuesday against the Devils, because the Devils are obviously not as good of an opponent as the Nashville Predators. The Predators are in a playoff spot. The Devils aren't. You mentioned that the Jets don't seem to have a lot of faith in Michael Hutchinson. He has not started a game since January 16th, ironically enough, against the San Jose Sharks.
Oh.
So, and it's been a rough year for Michael Hutchinson. Let's be honest, it's been a rough year for most of the goaltenders for the Winnipeg Jets, with the exception of maybe as of late for Connor Hellebuck. You know, he's played pretty well. We talked about his save percentage has been very good over the last three games and even, you know, into the games before that. So I think they're going to ride Connor Hellebuck. And as you talked about, when you're talking about Hellebuck, you know that they want him to play more games next year. He started 44 games so far this year. So let's say he starts 13 games for the rest of the season. That would give him 57 starts. Mm-hmm. And then they can know that next year he can play 60-plus games. And if they need to, they can bring in a veteran goaltender and he can back Connor Hellebuyck up. And if he struggles, then he can play more games. But I think absolutely Connor Hellebuyck is going to play 85 to 90% of the rest of the games for the Winnipeg Jets. And frankly, he deserves to because he's played very well. He picked up the shutout against the St. Louis Blues and almost shut out the Colorado Avalanche. So why wouldn't you keep riding him, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, when the team is playing as well as they are in front of him and they're playing that style that Blake Wheeler, quote, says gives them a chance to win every game, and that's really all you can ask for, right? Your goaltender makes the saves that he needs to make, and the team goes out and plays a certain style that gives you a chance to win every game. And if you lose, but you've put forth a valiant effort and you've left it all out there, then so be it. Like last night, I mean, tough loss, no points. However, you see that platform, that style of game that is conducive to winning, and you're like, well, at least they're playing consistently, and we can build on that. But I agree, they're gonna ride this guy for the experience alone.
Let's head to break, Sean. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Curtin Blog Radio on TSN 1040 Vancouver. You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
p.m. It's NHL This Week. It's Sean Assore and Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel is not in the province, so I'm filling in for Drew as the host. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you would like customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Let's hit the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Mike Halford, co-lead writer and editor for NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and co-host of Curtin Blog Radio on TSN 1040 Vancouver. Mike, what's going on?
Not much. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. It's there's a blizzard going on right now in Winnipeg, so it's a little
scary.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, it is snowing in the beginning of March in Vancouver, and it's been snowing for the last couple of days. It's crazy.
Yeah, Vancouver's been getting some snow this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been an absolutely insane winter by our usual standards. No one's prepared to deal with it. Nobody's happy. So we're just kind of waiting for this all to pass. Like, my kids' spring break starts at the end of this week, and it's snowing. So, yeah, everything's pretty great out here.
You know, Mike, I want to start off by talking about the Vancouver Canucks. You're based in Vancouver, of course, and the Canucks have been playing some pretty good hockey, even though they were sellers at the trade deadline, trading Yannick Hansen to the San Jose Sharks, trading Alexander Burrows to the Ottawa Senators. They play the Montreal Canadiens tonight. Is there any chance that the Vancouver Canucks might still be in this playoff race?
I mean, there's a chance, but honestly, no. It's just, look, even those last two wins that they had at the end of the California road trip, one-goal decisions, 4-3 over the Kings, 2-1 over the Ducks, they were horrendously outshot in both games. They gave up 44 shots in back-to-back games. And I mean, you're just not going to be able to withstand that kind of pressure and have successful results over a long period of time. They got a really inspired performance from their third string netminder, Richard Bachman, who came up from AHL Utica and had 43 saves against the Ducks. I mean, but that's a once in a year, twice in a year kind of performance. You can't count on that continuously. I will say this, is they're only 6 points out going in to tonight's action. And they are on the precipice of a five-game homestand, where they played okay this year. They're 18-10-4 at Rogers Arena. So they could make this thing closer than it deserves to be. I mean, they could end up getting closer to the playoffs than they have any right being. But at the end of the day, they're going to miss. And the thing is if they get too close to the playoff line, that's going to disappoint a lot of people in Vancouver, because a lot of people in Vancouver right now are on board with Team Tank. They want to see this thing go as close to the bottom of the standings as possible to give them a better chance at a draft pick so the rebuild can continue.
Mike, I want to focus on Bo Horvat. I was watching the Canucks-Kings game, pardon me. That was a nail-biter. And He's the one forward that really stands out to me as a mobile, quick, like, you know, just one of those guys that sticks out to you when you watch his skating. How important is this guy to the franchise moving forward?
He's the future of it. I mean, if you talk to enough people within Vancouver, they'll say that he's going to be the next captain of this team once Henrik Sedin relinquishes the C. The offensive ceiling is the big exciting factor for a lot of people locally, is I don't think when he got drafted, anyone assumed that he'd be putting up the points that he's putting up this year. I mean, he's on pace for like a 25-goal, 60-point year if he can continue at this clip, which is, you know, it's on that cusp of being a first-line center between the one and the two. And I think when a lot of people saw Horvat got drafted, I think he'll be a good, solid two-way NHL center for a long time, probably a two. I'm not sure if people thought that he'd ceiling out at a one, and that's where it looks like he might end up. And tonight he's going to be playing on a line with the newly acquired Nikolai Goldobin and Sven Barchi, two former first-round picks who are very high-skilled guys. So we may be getting a look at what the top of the Vancouver lineup could look like moving forward. But to answer your earlier point, he's hugely important. I mean, he's going to be the face of this franchise over the next 5-10 years. It's going to be really interesting to see how they do his contract extension, if they skip the bridge and just go right to the long-term deal. But I mean, he just continues to grow in leaps and bounds. He had the All-Star game this year in his hat. He's already going to set the career high in points. And again, like a 25-goal possible 60-point campaign is a really nice thing for a kid that just continues to grow year in and year out.
We're joined by Mike Halford, co-lead writer, editor of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, and he's also a member of Curtain Blog Radio, which is TSN 1040 Vancouver. Mike, going back to the trade deadline for a second there, Ryan Miller wasn't traded. A lot of people were expecting Ryan Miller to be traded. He's a pending UFA. Some people thought that one of those teams that was competing for a playoff spot might acquire him in a backup role, or maybe even to be their starting goaltender. How surprised were you that Ryan Miller was not traded? And is there a chance that the Vancouver Canucks maybe sign him to a one-year contract and bring him back next year?
Yeah, I wasn't hugely surprised that he stuck around. Okay, so he only had a five-team trade list that he could submit, and through various reports, three of the five teams were the California-based teams, so that he could be closer to his off-season home where his wife works out, et cetera, et cetera. And those teams just, they didn't really fit. I mean, Anaheim probably could have used an upgrade on Jonathan Bernier as the backup, but John Bishop's the unquestioned number one there, and I don't think they necessarily wanted to try and mess with him going into the playoffs. San Jose, maybe there was a spot there to get Ryan Miller in as a backup, but they didn't necessarily want to pay the price, and they seemed to like Aaron Dell. And then in Los Angeles, they went out and got their goalie that they wanted, and they targeted Ben Bishop. So outside of that, there wasn't a lot for the trade value of Miller going into the deadline. The other thing, too, is that I think he's a great fit for Vancouver next year. I mean, he has been, outside of Bo Horvat, the team's MVP this year. He's been rock solid. To have a .916 save percentage on a team that gets outscored this badly, I mean, they're minus 34 goal differentials. So they are not, by any stretch, a team that's playing at evens. Miller's been really good for them, and he's carried a big workload. Jacob Markstrom hasn't proven that he's capable of carrying a number one's workload. And look, I think Miller comes back at a reduced salary. There's no way he's going to make the $6 million he's making annually now, but on a reduced salary at maybe a shorter term where he can still be a guy that does a 60-40 split with Markstrom and is a mentor, I think that suits all parties involved, and I would not be surprised to see it get done.
Mike, you mentioned Nikolai Goldobin earlier. I'm just curious, what have you seen from the young forward just, you know, in his first few stints with the Canucks?
High skill package. High speed. He's got great offensive creativity. He's a bit of a mess defensively and in terms of his own zone. He's a guy that likes to blow the zone to try and get chances, and that's actually how he scored his first goal in a Canucks uniform. It was on a flip pass out of their own end. He scored on a breakaway against the Kings. But look, he was a guy that kind of came to Vancouver and arrived that was going to be an offensively talented guy, which this team really has a dearth of this year. They've got some nice guys offensively that can score on occasion, but Goldobin is a pure scorer and pure offense. And I think that's what they needed, is they'll take the lumps defensively and they'll realize that he's probably never going to win the Selke, but he's a guy that brings a certain skill package to the table that they just don't have a lot of. And it's going to be really interesting down the stretch here, because, I mean, one of the big talking points from his first game was he scores this great goal against the Kings on a breakaway, looks great doing it, and then head coach Willie Desjardins sits him down for basically the remainder of the game because he's trying to protect the lead against the Kings and doesn't really trust Goldobin defensively. I think the organization had a word with Desjardins after that, because the next game he got almost 13 minutes And as I mentioned tonight, Goldobin's going to play in a pretty prominent role with Horvat and with Barchin. He's going to play second power play minutes as well. So it looks like they're going to give him a chance to create a top six position for himself, which is what you want. He's a first round pick. He's still in his early 20s, and he's still got a lot to learn and a big way to grow in the NHL. So he's got a lot better shot of doing that in Vancouver than he ever would have in San Jose.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Curtin Blog Radio on TSN 1040 Vancouver. Just getting away from the Vancouver Canucks here for a second, Mike. Joe Thornton picked up assist number 1,000 last night against the Winnipeg Jets. Where do you think he ranks among the greatest playmakers of all time?
Well, he should have been in the NHL's top 100. I was in LA for that, and I talked to enough people, and the understanding was that there should have been a more emphasis on the quote-unquote recent guys rather than the six that just got in. And that was in no way diminishing the six, but to have the guys that give Jenny Malkin and Joe Thornton off the list is kind of crazy. And then now you look at Thornton, there's 13 players in NHL history with 1,000 assists. Wayne Gretzky, Ron Francis, Mark Messier, Ray Bourque, Jaromir Jagr, Paul Coffey, Adam Oates, Steve Yzerman, Gordie Howe, Marcel Dion, Mary Lemieux, and Joe Sakic are the 12. They're all on that NHL 100 list. They're all considered 12 of the greatest playmakers of all time. Thornton's there, and there's a huge gap next. I think Henrik Sedin is next, and he's like at 750 in his career for assists. So there's a significant gap between other guys that are about to enter this club. So that's where Thornton, he's probably the best playmaker of his generation. Consistency, durability, and the ability to do it over such a long period of time all factor into that as well. And I just think that, you know, hindsight being 2020, we're going to realize that this is the first ballot Hall of Famer, and this is one of the greatest 100 players of all time. The size factor, he kind of revolutionized that big-bodied playmaking guy that you kind of see more of now. And it's just, it's kind of a shame that it went the way that it did, because I really do think, in light of the fact that he's in such elite company in the 1,000 assist club, he really does deserve to be one of the 100 best players of all time.
You know, Mike, if you ask Winnipeg Jets fans, they'll tell you number 10 Dale Hawerchuk should have probably been on that list too.
Good point. Yeah, that was the other one that came up of the players that got the retired players that got passed. Well, basically, it came down to Hawerchuk, Michel Goulet got a lot of conversation, and then it was Malkin and Thornton. So, and again, it's not taking anything away from the guys on the list, and I don't think that this list, that's probably why they didn't do it numerically. It was because it wasn't meant to be anguished and argued about. Obviously, there was going to be some snubs, but I just look at Thornton, and really, it's kind of cut and dry when you look at the names that I just mentioned in that club, and he's part of it, and there's really nobody else close to joining anytime soon. I do think that that kind of puts him over the top.
Mike, I want to focus on the Carolina Hurricanes. Eddie Lack getting his second straight start tonight versus the Avalanche after, well, being essentially chewed out to the public by Bill Peters, their head coach. When, I'm just trying to pick your brain, when is the last time you can recall of a head coach absolutely chewing out one of his goaltenders to the public in the media?
Well, yeah, there's that. There's also the fact that it was Bill Peters that was doing it. Because I wrote a piece a couple of years ago on Pro Hockey Talk kind of contrasting him and Patrick Waugh, because Patrick Waugh was calling out Semyon Varlamov and all the Avalanche goalies frequently. I mean, it was his tactic was to go to the media with it. Meanwhile, Peters had substantially worse goaltending in Carolina that season and would never, ever, ever blame his netminders. And actually, if you follow Peters on the regular, and I do just by nature of Pro Hockey Talk covering all 30 markets, he's a very measured guy. He very rarely takes guys to task in the media. And look, I know everyone kind of had got on Peters' case and said he didn't really know what he was talking about, didn't understand the nuances of goaltending, and it was kind of an unfair attack. My theory is that this had very little to do with Eddie Lack's on-ice performance and a lot more to do with the perception of Eddie Lack. And this dates back to his time in Vancouver, because there were major rumblings and significant whispers that he was a guy that was a little too aloof, a little too kooky, and maybe didn't take his career seriously enough. I remember there was an article in the Vancouver Sun, and it said that, you know, Lack's best friend when he was in Vancouver was the team's social media and website writer. And it wasn't that he didn't get along with his teammates, because he did. He was just a different personality. He was a fun-loving guy that liked to tweet about tacos and get crazy tattoos and stuff. And the thing that Bill Peters said that really stuck out for me wasn't, you know, make a bleep and save. It was, he said right prior to that, you know, this is a guy that has to earn the respect of his teammates.
Totally.
He needs to match the work level that they have. And I thought that was really interesting, because you got to remember, when Carolina traded and signed Eddie Lack, they did it before he played a single regular season game in Carolina. Like, they thought they had found something really special here, and it's been a big disappointment ever since he signed that contract. So I think Peters was just frustrated, and I think that did have a lot to do with some behind and off-ice stuff. Not necessarily about Lack's numbers and his lack of success, but I think there was a real question about his professionalism there. I honestly do.
Mike, if you look at the Eastern Conference standings right now, there are only 3 points that separate the 8th-place New York Islanders and the 12th-place Philadelphia Flyers. If you can look into your crystal ball here for a second, who's going to grab that last playoff spot in the East?
I would be terrified of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think this is a team that has underperformed all year, and they've almost got that, you know, I think there's a bit of pressure off now because the sale's been done. Like, all the rumors around Boyle and Bishop and Filppula don't exist anymore because they're all gone. Like, that's done. And then this team almost, I think it almost feels like it was given up on a little bit because Yzerman did the fire sale at the deadline. And now you look at them, 6-2-2 in their last 10. They're 2 points back of the Islanders. They're playing great hockey right now. Vasilevsky doesn't have to worry about sharing starts because he's the unquestioned number one. Stamkos is getting closer to a return. And now it's like guys like Johnson and Kucherov and Drouin and Palat and Killorn. This is their team. Like, there's nothing really holding them back. A bunch of the veterans are gone. So it's like Kucherov's playing great right now. Jonathan Drouin's had a fantastic year. I would be very, very worried about them seeing, because think about it. Could you think of a worse team to play in the opening round if Tampa Bay gets hot at the end of the year, sneaks in as a wild card, and then you got a first-round matchup where it's like Hedman, Johnson, Palat, Kucherov, Vasilevsky if he's on form, and maybe they get Stamkos back? They're the scariest team to me right now for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I think it's really the two teams from the state of Florida. Also, the Florida Panthers, even though they lost their last game to the Dallas Stars, they play tonight versus the New York Rangers. But for me, it's the Lightning and the Panthers that the Islanders and Leafs have to worry about right now. Mike, really appreciate your time tonight, and we'll have to have you on, you know, come playoff time.
Sounds good, guys. Anytime.
All right. Take it easy, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to start to preview tomorrow night's game between the Jets and Pens. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Headman pass to the far side for Malkin. Marches in. Malkin trying to go inside and out on Truba. Send it out in front of shot. They score. Guess who? Sidney Crosby on his night will win it for Pittsburgh. What a play by Evgeny Malkin. And Sidney Crosby had an easy tap in. 3 points tonight here for Sid the Kid, making 1,002 in his career.
Jets and Pens. Tomorrow night, puck drop, 7 p.m. Central Time at MTS Center. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find Bernstein's on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Big thanks to Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Curtin Blog Radio on TSN 1040 for joining us last segment. Sean, we're going to now switch our attention to the Jets and Pens. That epic game back on February 16th, it was a Thursday night in Pittsburgh. So much was going on. You had Evgeny Malkin running Blake Wheeler. You had the Jets trying to fight and claw for their playoff lives. They ended up losing that game in overtime. Evgeny Malkin was not kicked out of the game. He was not suspended. The Jets got the 1 point, but they wanted the 2 points, and now they have the opportunity tomorrow night at MTS Center to exact their revenge on the defending Stanley Cup champions. First off, let's go back to that game, what was it, less than 3 weeks ago in Pittsburgh between the Jets and Penguins.
February 16th.
It seems like these two teams always play high-scoring games, and maybe when you have Crosby, Malkin, Scheifele, Laine, Wheeler on the ice, you're going to have lots of goals anytime you play. It's tough to have 1-0 or 2-1 games when you have that many talented offensive players playing. But was that game on February 16th the best game that we've seen this year? Not necessarily the result, but the quality of hockey and the physicality and all of that.
Yeah, that seemed to be the game where the Jets really identified the style that they need to play to be successful, and maybe it was a little bit of osmosis seeing the way the Penguins play. And, you know, when you play a team that is coming off of a Stanley Cup championship, you maybe want to mold yourself after said team. And you also forgot to mention, as Sidney Crosby got his 1,000th point in that game, so a milestone for Sid the Kid as well, so... happy times, I guess.
It seems like every single milestone happens against the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, I said that yesterday. I was like, oh, Joe Thornton needs one assist to get 1,000. Well, I can assure you the Jets will need to score two because Joe Thornton's setting up a goal.
In the 1990s, I think, didn't Wayne Gretzky have like 10 different milestones against the Winnipeg Jets with the Oilers and the Kings?
Probably more. But yeah, Justin Schultz also got a little taste of what Dustin Byfuglien brings to that game. I believe he injured him for a few games after crushing him into the wall there, but... Paul Postma getting his first goal of the season that game. So, you know, there's some storylines going into this one. I just, you know, for everyone who's watching and just a hockey fan in general, obviously you want to see the Jets win, but you just want to see a repetition of that last game. There was offense. There was some bite. There was some nastiness, big hits. Blake Wheeler saying, listen, I'm not going after Evgeny Malkin. We got bigger fish to fry. We got a game to win. We got points to earn. So, you know, a little bit of... responsibility and maturity there. I wonder if Schultz is going to go after Byfuglien.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of Justin Schultz, he had a goal and two assists in the last game. Pittsburgh came from behind to beat Buffalo 4-3 Sunday night. Justin Schultz is top five in the NHL amongst defensemen in scoring. He's having an incredible season. I think he's now at 44 points. You know, he's a guy that the Edmonton Oilers really didn't think factored into their long-term plans. But going back to tomorrow night's game, Sean, I agree. I think whenever you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin in town, and that only happens once a year because, of course, the Jets are not in the Eastern Conference, so they only play the Penguins twice a year. But I think fans are always really excited to see Crosby. You always see a lot of 87 jerseys. You always see a lot of 71 jerseys. You even see a few people rocking the rare Phil Kessel jersey. So, you know, one thing that I find interesting about this Penguins team, they've only lost four games all year at home, but they've actually only been around 500. In fact, they're 13-12-5 on the road this year. And even though the Penguins have scored the most goals in the NHL with 221, they're actually only middle of the pack when it comes to goals against. And when you look at Matt Murray, he was pulled from the game, and Marc-Andre Fleury came in, and he made all 28 saves. He ended up getting the first star of the game. I think there was something like 45 shots on goal by the Buffalo Sabres. Give the Sabres a lot of credit, by the way. They're not making the playoffs this year, but they're playing very well under Dan Bylsma. Mm-hmm. But this Pittsburgh Penguins team, I think, without Chris Letang, without Olli Mäta, and without Trevor Daley, I mean, this team is a little injured right now. Brian Rust is another guy who's injured, but, you know, they've brought in Mark Streit, they've brought in Ron Hainsey, Brian Dumoulin and Justin Schultz is actually their top pair right now. So, I mean, whenever you have some injuries, you're catching an opponent, maybe not at their best, but down the middle with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Nick Bonino, I mean, it's going to be tough to limit this team to only two or three goals. I mean, they score goals. That's what they do. So do you see the Jets limiting the Penguins, or do you think this is going to be another high-scoring game, Sean?
Well, you know, you could have said the same thing yesterday. You could have said, do you see the Jets limiting the San Jose Sharks? And I think it really all comes down to defense and attention to detail in your own zone. Sidney Crosby is going to get his chances. You know, he's going to make some incredible play along the wall and pass it to someone in the high slot for a shot. It's whether or not you can either cover said man in the high slot or recover and avoid those scramble plays that somehow the Jets find themselves in every so often in the defensive zone where a lot of people are puck watching, like the Pavelski goal yesterday. But like we talked about in the first segment, Ezzy, this team can score. This Jets team can score. You want to play a run-and-gun style, like you want to go 6-5 game, they can play that game. And now we're starting to see that they can kind of buckle down and play in those tight games. It's going to be a task, and it's going to be a challenge, but you know what? The way they've been playing late, like Blake Wheeler said, gives them a chance to win.
And to your point, Sean, you know, the mistake that Patrick Laine made in the third period, which resulted in Mikael Bodker's shorthanded breakaway goal, you just can't make those types of mistakes against Pittsburgh. We know they're the fastest team in the league, or at the very least, they're one of the fastest teams in the league. They're the best team probably up the middle with Crosby and Malkin, and then throw in Nick Bonino. I'll take him as a third-line center any day of the week. And then you throw in whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury or Matt Murray. Who do you think starts tomorrow? Because I think it's going to be Marc-Andre Fleury. He started last game against the Jets, and then we just mentioned he was the goaltender who ended up getting the win against the Buffalo Sabres. So I think we're going to see Marc-Andre Fleury tomorrow night. But regardless, like you said, I mean, you have to play mistake-free hockey. You have to stick to your defensive structure, and you can't take a lot of penalties because we know we can list off all the players that they have, even if they don't have Chris Letang. These guys can outscore anybody in the NHL, with maybe the exception of the Washington Capitals right now. But you think it's going to go with? Do you think they'll go with Marc-Andre Fleury tomorrow?
I wouldn't be surprised, only because of his performance against Buffalo in that 4-3 comeback win. He made a huge save on Evander Kane on a breakaway when it was 3-1, and that kind of turned the tide in that game. I was watching the game, and you could just kind of see the momentum start to shift, and Pittsburgh started pressing and coming, and they started scoring, and that led to the victory. So yeah, you kind of want to reward Marc-Andre Fleury with another start. I mean, the Jets are a desperate team, and I'm sure Pittsburgh realizes they're going into a really hostile building with a not terrific road record, and maybe putting their stud rookie netminder in net is a good idea. But I think I just think that your hunch is inkling towards the correct, and I think we may see number 29 in net.
You know, and he wasn't moved at the trade deadline,
exactly.
Sean. And we weren't expecting him to be moved because you have the expansion draft coming up, but they can only protect one goaltender, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thinks it's going to be Matt Murray. But for the playoffs, they've decided to go with the two-headed monster. Matt Murray obviously got the majority of the starts last year, but heading into the playoffs right now, well, we've still got 5 weeks left, but Matt Murray's started 38 games. Marc-Andre Fleury has started 32. So that's not that far away from a 50-50 split. And Marc-Andre Fleury, I agree with you. I do think he's going to start. We're going to go to break right now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Bill West. We've had him on the show before. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review newspaper. We'll ask him about who he thinks is going to start in net for the Penguins, and basically we're going to talk everything that you need to know about tomorrow night's game. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Halfway through the show, NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, filling in for Drew Mandel. I'm joined by Sean Assor. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Bill West, Pittsburgh Penguins beat writer for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review newspaper. We're going to be previewing the Jets-Penguins game tomorrow night. Bill, how's it going?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How about you, Ezra?
Doing well. We're doing well. It's not the best weather right now in Winnipeg, so it was a little rough getting to the studio tonight. But aside from that, we're doing well. We're doing good.
I've never experienced it, or I haven't experienced it yet, but I'm told it is rare that the weather is great in Winnipeg. Is that true, or is that just a biased, non-locals view on Winnipeg?
No, it's true.
Yeah, that's 100%.
No, I mean, well, basically between the months of December and March, it's pretty cold. But then once you get into April and May, it's very beautiful. So basically you've got four really bad months there and 8 months that aren't too bad.
That works then. Manageable.
Yeah. But even if you come during the winter, Bill, it's a great city. We have a lot of great things going on. So, you just bundle up, you put your Canada Goose jacket on, and you'll be all right.
That works. I'm at the school of Syracuse, so, I'm familiar with the tundra effect and, how you go about surviving it. So
there you go.
So, you get creative, and like I said, you muster on.
No, Bill, I want to get right to the Penguins here, and we were talking about Marc-Andre Fleury and how well he played last game against the Buffalo Sabres. The Penguins came back from down 3-0, and Marc-Andre Fleury ended up being the first star of that game. Do you expect Marc-Andre Fleury to start tomorrow night against the Winnipeg Jets? And looking forward to the rest of the season going into the playoffs, is there a clear-cut number one goaltender for the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Yes. Marc-Andre Fleury will not start, or I don't expect him to start. They haven't announced, so I can't say for certain. But Marc-Andre Fleury's performance the other night aside, You know, the Penguins have made it pretty clear that they believe in Matt Murray as their number one guy. You know, down the stretch, that that arrangement has kind of been the case for weeks now. And Fleury, you know, was inconsistent, which didn't help his cause. He's looked better of late, but I don't think the Penguins are you know, going to second guess at this point in the season and, you know, start going back to that kind of two goalie shuffle. So I think they're encouraged by the fact that Fleury is playing well. That means that they can plug him in and, you know, not have to sweat, you know, what happens next, that kind of thing. If Fleury can settle into a backup routine and be good with that, then that's cool with them. That's obviously why they didn't trade him. They, you know, they want to have two what they call starting quality goalies, and I think they do, especially if Fleury can kind of stay out of his own head.
Bill, I'm curious. The Penguins added Mark Strait, Ron Hainsey at the trade deadline. They're paired together now on the blue line. Just how do the two of them? How does the two of them kind of change the outlook of the blue line and, you know, the makeup and the look of the defense?
They've been very steady and consistent, which I think is what the team overall has needed. I don't know if either of them are necessarily upgrades or viewed as such. The two guys that they essentially have replaced, at least until the players get healthy, were Olli Maatta and Trevor Daley. Both of those guys, you know, have had kind of up and down years in terms of performance. They're out of course right now with injuries, and probably if they do come back before the end of the season, it'll be right before the end. So there's a couple more weeks there that probably everyone will be waiting. But, you know, Hainsey and Strait have come in, and I think what really helps with them is, you know, they're proven veterans and they understand their game. You know, neither of them are really going through any sort of identity crisis or trying to be something more than you know, what they've been in recent years. Hainsey is, I guess, what I call a modern stay-at-home guy. You know, good shot suppressor, understands how to clear out the crease, good outlet passes. You know, not trying to do too much offensively, just be defensively responsible. Mark Streit, of course, is kind of the flip side. He is more of an offensive guy. He's still a good passer, good transition play guy. So, you know, they complement each other well, and I think, again, they're both settled and accepting of the fact that they're in kind of the latter years of their careers. You know, with Trevor Daley and Olli Maatta, is a little different. You know, Daley is going to be an unrestricted free agent. I think he, after having a great year last year with the Penguins, was you know, trying to do different things or continue, you know, what had been a really strong start with the Penguins. He would have to do some different roles too, to do a little more penalty killing. So I think things like that maybe took a toll on him. And Olli Maatta is just still young, and I think figuring out his game. He this year went from being a top pair guy who, you know, had potential puck mover kind of skills to being a you know, a stay at home shutdown kind of guy. So he struggled with that role a little bit. So I think it's a case of finding guys that are just comfortable and consistent with their style of play, as opposed to players that are working through it. You know, in the middle of the season.
We're joined by Bill West on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review newspaper. Bill, I wanted to stick with the defenseman here. We were talking about Justin Schultz last segment, and Justin Schultz is now up to 44 points. He had 3 points in that win against the Buffalo Sabres. Are you surprised that Justin Schultz has taken even another step forward? Because last year, I mean, Justin Schultz seemed to be the perfect fit for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, he's been remarkable. I don't want to sugarcoat it or, you know, sell him short, because I'm running out of ways, I guess, to say how impressive he's been. You know, when the Penguins got him, of course, it was for a third round pick, and the Oilers seemed all too happy to give him away. So, you know, the expectation was, okay, Justin Schultz will be an interesting rehab project. Maybe he can become a valuable part of the blue line and kind of a depth role. And initially, that was the case. He got kind of soft minutes and you know, easy matchups, and was able to really just focus on being steady defensively, but mostly to, you know, do what he does offensively. But now we've seen him really become more of a true two-way defenseman. At the beginning of the year, there was still a little bit of that sheltering effect where he was getting soft matchups. But with Chris Letang out and Brian Dumoulin was out for a stretch of time, and, of course, Maatta and Daley, the Penguins don't necessarily have the luxury of sheltering guys at this point. And to the degree that they do, they're doing it with the guys they still have called up a little bit. So Schultz has been thrust into at least a middle pairing role. I wouldn't call him a top pairing guy right now, But he's playing, certainly the highest minutes he's played with the Penguins, and is closer to maybe the way he was deployed with Edmonton, but we're not seeing that blow up. Of course, a very different team he's playing for now, so that helps too. But yeah, Justin Schultz, I don't know what the future holds. He's going to be a restricted free agent. It'll be interesting to see what kind of payday he gets. He's arbitration eligible if the Penguins go that route. But, I wouldn't be surprised if he does get a contract extension sometime before the end of the season, because the way he's playing right now, that's a guy you want to keep around.
Bill, I'm curious. You're around the Penguins a lot, and I want to focus maybe on a different team right now, the New York Islanders. They've got a young rookie who is deciding on a number on his jersey, and he's deciding to go with 66. That, of course, Josh Hosang. I'm curious as to the reactions going on around, the Pittsburgh media and the players and some of the historical players behind in Pittsburgh. What are the general thoughts coming out of Pittsburgh regarding this?
I think you're seeing kind of split reactions. I'm actually born and raised in Pittsburgh, so I even had my own perspective on it. And my feeling, and again, I would say it's maybe not quite 50-50 in the city, but there's a significant portion of fans that completely understand and support the idea of honoring Lemieux by, wearing 66, especially, again, Josh Hosang said he was a fan of Lemieux growing up and, thinks that he was right up there with Gretzky, greatest of all time kind of thing. So I am completely okay with it. I'm not really a fan of retiring any numbers, especially if it's just on the basis of them being a great player. It's a bit different if it's a Jackie Robinson kind of thing in baseball. But, I'm okay with it, and I think a lot of Pittsburgh fans are. But on the flip side, yes, you have people that feel that no one should touch the 66 number unless maybe if Connor McDavid did, the fans would be like, well, of course, he's going to be on the Mount Rushmore of hockey too one day. So there's kind of this, this pressure or demand now from that side of Penguins fans that, if this kid's going to wear 66, he better be a phenom. He better be one of the best ever kind of thing. And that's unfair, of course. And, it sounds from what I've read, like Josh has things, a pretty confident kid. So, he's not necessarily saying that's a certainty, but he, I guess, wants to be up for the challenge or at least prove that he's the kind of player that should wear 66. So, I say power to him. If it blows up in his face, I'm sure he'll feel, a little regret, a little remorse about drawing the attention that way. But, it's also just a number.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of cojones to wear the number worn by arguably the greatest player of all time. Bill West joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review newspaper. Bill, I wanted to ask you about the playoff format right now. As it stands, looks like the Pittsburgh Penguins are locked in to play the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round, but the New York Rangers are only 2 points behind both the Pittsburgh Penguins and Columbus Blue Jackets, who are tied with 88 points. Speaking of, the same numbers there. Is there a team that the Pittsburgh Penguins would rather play? Because when you look back a few years ago when the Pittsburgh Penguins played the Columbus Blue Jackets, they gave them a little bit of a scare there.
Yeah, I think Columbus matches up well with the Penguins. And again, even last year when Columbus was a weak team, when you look at how the standings played out, they still, late in the season, were giving the Penguins problems. I don't know if it's a Tortorella thing or if it's just the fact that Brandon Dubinsky, guys like that, kind of get up to play against Sidney Crosby. Whatever the explanation, Columbus presents a challenge. Washington, of course, is the cream of the crop right now, so I don't think the Penguins are any more in a hurry to play them than the other team. I also think the Penguins are confident that they can keep up with the Capitals, so it's not a case of must avoid at all costs, but they're realistic about, how difficult that that series will be. So, I joked with someone on Twitter the other day because they were a Rangers fan, and the Rangers called up Tanner Glass and, were kind of making moves that seemed to fly in the face of their strategy for much of the season. And I said, well, the Rangers, they're in that top wild card spot. They got they're a little too close to the Penguins right now. They got to make sure they stay in the wild card because, let's face it, if you're a Metropolitan team right now, do you really want to be on that side of the playoff bracket if the alternative is to play the Atlantic champion? Which, let's face it, whoever ends up winning the Atlantic division, I don't think will be as imposing as any of the three teams in the Metro right now. So, if the Rangers can stay in that position, you know, they might like their chances better than, you know, slipping into the number three spot and then suddenly you're going up against the Penguins or Columbus or, again, conceivably Washington if they collapse. So it's I don't think any of the Metro teams envy any of the other Metro teams because they all realize they're just in for a battle.
But, Bill, that's my whole point, right? Like, if you look at whether it's the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Columbus Blue Jackets, or the Rangers, who have 86 to 88 points, we know the Capitals are going to win the division. They're 7 points ahead with 95 points right now. But isn't it kind of ridiculous to have the New York Rangers with 86 points in the first wild card when you have the Boston Bruins with 74 points, who should really be the seventh-ranked team, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the format as it stands is not working out well. I don't know if it's a scenario where, you know, they go back to the drawing board and say, hey, listen, we just need to go back to the 1-8 kind of seeding. But for this year anyway, yeah, it's going to create problems and it's going to be disappointing that only one of the, I guess you could argue four teams out of the Metro, top four teams out of the Metro, they'll get a chance to make the they're going to end up knocking each other out, that only one of Columbus, Washington, and the Penguins in all likelihood makes it to the Eastern Conference final. So, you know, it's easy to look at it now and say, man, they should have done something about this. But yeah, you know, I'm sure the GMs, whether they talk about the meetings right now or in the future, they'll come up with another idea in a couple of years, and then that will eventually present problems too. Imperfect system, but, you know, you got to commit to one, I guess.
Bill, I just one more question for you. I just want to focus on tomorrow's game in Winnipeg between the Pens and Jets. Last time these two teams met, February 16th in Pittsburgh, there was a little animosity, to say the least, between both clubs. Mm-hmm. A couple big hits, one on Blake Wheeler, one on Justin Schultz. There was a few lead changes. It was actually a very entertaining game. Do you expect a little bit of bite, we'll say, tomorrow in Winnipeg?
I think it could be interesting. Yeah, I know that there was some frustration on the part of the Jets, or I mean, you guys probably know this better than I do, about Malkin's hit on Wheeler. And, I think the Jets right now are just a team that, you know, looking to prove something, looking to, you know, be, whether it's an underdog, upsetting the order elsewhere in the league, or, you know, just kind of make a final push in the regular season, whatever the case may be. They're a team that plays a physical style, and the Penguins have known all year that, you know, that's how teams want to get after them. You're not really going to beat the Penguins if you try to, you know, be faster and more skilled, because let's face it, there just aren't many, you know, rosters around the league that can do that. You'd be hard to play against, you know, the term that you always hear out there, and physical and, abrasive, all the other popular hockey terms. And you kind of take your chances that way. So I don't know if it'll be, you know, line brawls left and right, but yeah, I could see maybe a little bit chippiness and some hostility. And the Penguins, they're probably going to see that the next couple games after that, because, you know, Western Canada, that's kind of how they play. And I'm sure they look at a lot of the Penguins roster, some of those undersized guys and defensemen that we just talked about, like Mark Strait and Justin Schultz, and say, all right, these guys are, I'm sure in their minds, soft. Let's go after them and see if we can break them.
And I think Jets fans are ready to welcome back Ron Hainsey into the house at MTS Center as well, Bill.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how the reception is there. And, if there's a guy that maybe won't be pushed around, Hainsey is high on that list. He certainly sticks out in the Penguins locker room with, his size and, kind of the way he's built. So it'll be an interesting reception for a couple guys. We mentioned Justin Schultz, and he hasn't played in Edmonton since he got traded. So, The reception there probably will be a little chilly, I would bet.
Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, thank you very much for joining us tonight on NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Bill, take care.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk, Sean, about the NHL General Managers Meeting down in sunny Boca Raton, Florida. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
It smells like no Drew on the show this week.
Smells like team spirit between me and you.
Like it. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. 1290 Radio. Big thanks to Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for joining us to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Penguins game. If you don't follow Bill on Twitter, give him a follow, bwest_trib. He's a great follow and does, as I mentioned, a great job covering the Pittsburgh Penguins. Should mention that this segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Next segment, Sean, we've got Stephen Wino of the Associated Press coming up. We're going to talk to him about the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, a little bit about the NHL General Managers meetings. He wasn't there today or yesterday or tomorrow. It's a three-day event, but we're going to touch on some of the topics and issues with him. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. I do want to spend a little bit of time here talking about the GM's meetings in Boca Raton, Florida. They've been discussing some potential rule changes and also just kind of brainstorming some ideas about where the game might be heading in 5 to 10 years. We're going to play a clip of the insiders right now talking about the first day of the GM meetings in Boca Raton, Florida. Then we're going to talk about some of the ideas that were thrown around, because I think some of them were good and some of them not so good. So let's hear what the insiders had to say.
You know, we spent all these years trying to create more offense. What about limiting defense, taking some tools out of the toolbox for all these smart coaches? And one idea that resurfaced on day one, well, it was an old one from Bob Gainey, GM of the Montreal Canadiens at the time, at the 2008 GM meetings here, who said, why not change shot blocking so that you can't have a full slide body block, that you have to have both skates on the ice when you block a shot? At the time, the GMs thought it was kind of silly, but in fact, turns out Bob Gainey maybe saw something coming a lot of guys didn't, because that's an issue in today's game. Guys collapsing around the net, it takes an act of God, as Brad Treliving said, to get a point shot through. The other thing that I found interesting, and I know Drake's going to shake his head, but the discussion today by one group about 3 points for a 60-minute win to sort of undo this logjam and what I think is an artificial parity in the NHL standings. They talked about it, although Lou Lamoriello, a throwback, said let's just go back to 2 points for a win and no loser point. Good luck. I don't think the NHL wants to change the point system.
A lot of these radical new ideas that were discussed maybe aren't that new. I mean, at a research and development camp years ago, the notion of taking the face-off dots in the offensive zone, instead of having them on either side of the net, they would have them in the middle, right in the slot, directly in front of the net. That was discussed over time today, although they talked about maybe why does it need to be a face-off circle? Why couldn't it be a face-off rectangle and spread those players out some more? But as much as they talked about the big blue sky future with the next 5 to 10 years, I think a lot of their discussion always came back to what are we going to do about the here and now. And I think what's on the agenda for Tuesday is trying to come up with a better way to deal with the offside coaches challenge. It's really become a case of unintended consequences. The reviews are too long. There's been too much ambiguity in terms of the rule and whether the skate is on the ice or off the ice. I think that's probably the number one tangible thing they need to come out of these meetings with, is some way to improve that whole process.
Okay, Sean, so let's talk about some of these blue sky ideas, even though it's a gray sky in Winnipeg right now. Let's start with that eliminating the two face-off dots in each zone in favor of one central circle or rectangle. What are your thoughts? You play hockey. You watch a lot of hockey. When you hear that idea being bandied about by some of these general managers, what do you think? Is there any merit to it, or is that the dumbest idea you've ever heard of?
Well, the first thing I think of is awkward. Like, just like picturing that on the ice is just odd, right?
Yes.
Like, to me, that just seems like such a like a wackadoo idea that they're just like, well, we have this idea, so we've been thinking about this, and how about this? Like, you know, it just kind of seems like a desperate ploy to almost like, oh, we're kind of thinking of things here. We've got this rectangle that we're going to install in the middle. I don't see that. You think about how much of an uproar goalies made when they talked about adding a little bit of net to each side. Think about goaltenders and players when essentially you're going to have to rejig your entire offensive structure off of the face-off because the face-off circle is now in the middle as opposed to the two sides. I see that as a far cry and a bit of a hoax.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when you talk about eliminating two face-off circles in each zone, so four total, and then moving to one in each zone, two total, mm-hmm. you're really changing the entire structure an outlook of the way the game is played, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what the general managers talk about quite often when they have these think tanks and they get together and kind of talk about changing the fundamentals of the game. Some of the time, you know, this is dismissed early, and maybe they consider something over others. When you talk about making the nets bigger, for me, that's a non-starter. And you could call me old school, or you could call me a traditionalist, but I don't think you can really discuss making the nets bigger, because if you make the nets bigger, then you can basically just erase all of the records and start again. Mm-hmm. Because if the nets were bigger, then Wayne Gretzky probably scores 1,400 goals, right?
Yeah, oh, totally.
So for me, eliminating two face-off dots in each zone in favor of one central face-off dot is stupid.
Like, obviously, they see some sort of merit in the form of offense. I don't know, maybe to set up one-timers faster off the draw. Like, I'm not really sure the reasoning. Like, I'd be interested to see their reasoning and, like, their pros and cons to this rule change, because to me, this just seems kind of silly.
Let's get off that one for a second, Sean. I didn't put this one in the show plan, but something that was bandied about down in Florida, and this is something that I know you've heard of before, but that's bringing the red line back, the two-line pass back, and maybe even increasing the size of the offensive zone. What do you think about that? Because that really does make the ability to make plays in the neutral zone easier, and you maybe start to see coaches not be able to clog up the neutral zone, because that's really one of the biggest issues. In addition to teams collapsing in front of the net and clogging up the area in front of the net, making it hard to get point shots through, that's really what we see too much, right? The old left wing locker, neutral zone trap, whatever you want to say. So what do you think about that, bringing that red line back?
Personally, I don't like it. I'm a guy that appreciates the pass. I love watching a nice, crisp two-line pass that sends a guy in. Obviously, they're rare, one or two a game, maybe, like, if that. But I love that part of hockey. I love, like, how quick it is. It's almost like a running back breaking through the lineman and busting one. You know, it happens so fast. And I love it. I loved when they took it out. I loved what it's produced. What interests me is making the offensive zones bigger.
Right.
To me, that is something that kind of could be played with. Ray Ferraro had an interesting take on it, how he said that it wouldn't increase offense because everyone would just suck back. And yet, despite the fact that there's more more room around the blue line, guys would just retreat into their own zone farther towards the goalie, kind of protect the house mentality. That kind of interests me. The red line, I like to see it out.
On the topic of trying to limit team's ability to put in defensive schemes, forcing players to have both skates on the ice to block a shot, a brainchild of former Canadiens general manager Bob Gainey, one of the best defensive forwards of all time from the 1970s. What are your thoughts on limiting block shots, making certain types of shot blocking illegal?
It's an interesting concept, absolutely, just regarding how much less space you can cover when you're vertical. The only issue I have with that is as opposed to, you know, you're on one knee or sliding or whatever, but the only issue I have with that is, think about it from a player's perspective.
How do you enforce that,
well,
right?
That, and not just that, but think about, you're going to ask a player, you're going to block a shot with potentially the least protected parts of your body now. Because a lot of time these guys shoot low just to get it through that first layer of defense, get it on net. So if you can't drop and, let's say, expose your shin pads or your shorts, or, you know, your thigh protectors, you have to rely on blocking a shot essentially with your skates. Think about how much more injuries and how many more foot injuries will result in that.
And Sean, by forcing players to have both skates on the ice, what this essentially means is that sliding to block a shot is not allowed, which I think is an amazing skill. We saw Josh Morrissey do it yesterday to, I believe, break up a 2-on-1.
And Joe Pavelski did it to break up a 3-on-1.
Yes. So, I mean, that type of play might be considered illegal if this rule were implemented. So I personally don't think...
Great point.
I'm, again, one of those traditionalists. I don't think any rules need to be added to the game. I think the game is at a great place. Just look at the way the young superstars like Patrick Laine, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews have been playing. I'm not saying that the game is perfect, but that's not one of the rules. Making nets bigger, we already talked about, increasing the size of the offensive zone. Going back to the point format, and I know that's something that Huss has written about and he's talked about on Hustler and Lawless quite a bit.
He's passionate about this.
I'm just going to put it simply, Sean, would you bring back tie games?
No. Not a fan.
Would you bring in a three-point system?
I would bring in the three-point system. That's where I support the change.
So you would give 3 points for a regulation win and 2 points for an overtime or shootout win, and then the 1 point for the loss.
Yeah, I like the phrase Pierre LeBrun used, artificial parity. This kind of spreads out the artificial parity from a 2 point win. Yeah, this really showcases who the winning teams are in the NHL. You know, you get that third point and you pull away. But in the middle of the packs, it kind of keeps everything a little bit closer. Like Washington Capitals, for instance, they'd be leading like they are right now. But in the middle, it makes things a little bit more interesting. And I like the 3 points for the victory. I think it's really intriguing for teams that are chasing. And if you can get on a winning streak, I mean, you're rewarded.
I would personally go back to tie games. You know, you've known me for a long time.
Yeah.
I absolutely hate the shootout.
Yeah.
I don't even watch them.
I like finality. I like
the only time I will watch a shootout, Sean, is if it's international hockey.
That is exciting.
And obviously, if I'm at the Jets game, I don't close my eyes. I watch the shootout. But as far as I'm concerned, anything to get rid of the shootout. And the trapezoid, by the way. I don't think that's talked about enough. The Marty Brodeur rule.
Yeah, we got to get that out of here.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Let goalies play the puck behind the net. We got to go to break, Sean, because we have Steven Wino coming up. So we're going to head to break right now. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. Second last segment. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center. Official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be a Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Rory, let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Steven Wino of the Associated Press on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Steven, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We're doing well. We brought you on to talk about some of the playoff races that are currently going on right now. And because you're in the East, let's start with the Eastern Conference. There are only 5 points that separate, pardon me, there are actually only 3 points that separate right now the 8th place New York Islanders and the 12th place Philadelphia Flyers, who you used to cover. When you look at those 5 teams competing for that last wild card spot, which team do you think is going to really take the bull by the horns and get into the playoffs here?
Look, amazing as this might be after what Steve Yzerman did, I think it's the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it's crazy to think after they traded away Ben Bishop, after they traded away Valtteri Filppula, that the Lightning would be in this spot. But when you consider Steven Stamkos is on the verge of returning within the next couple of weeks at least, look, consider what that team could be if Andrei Vasilevsky gets his stuff together in goal and Steven Stamkos is back with the triplets, with Victor Hedman, with Anton Stralman. That's a talented team that I can tell you, if the Washington Capitals can pick who they don't face in the first round of the playoffs, it's a Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think the Flyers have a chance if they get good goaltending from Steve Mason in the meantime. If Claude Giroux starts to look like Claude Giroux again, they're in it. The Maple Leafs are certainly in the exciting team that if they get into a playoff spot, but they could also certainly be in a top three spot in the Atlantic Division. Montreal's kind of created a little bit of separation now, but between Boston, Ottawa, Toronto, those teams, any of those teams could win the division or miss the playoffs potentially. The Tampa Bay Lightning would be the team I'd be the most scared about if I'm the Capitals, and a team that can make the most noise of all those teams if they get into the playoffs.
Steven, I'm curious, just looking at the composition of both teams, is this possibly the most intriguing year for a Penguins-Capitals playoff series, just based on the way they're constructed, and they're both pretty much primed to go entering the postseason?
Yeah, and last year's series was fun. It didn't have the glitz and the glamour of that 2009 series, when Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin had this dueling hat trick, those two guys at the prime of their careers. But given the situations of these teams, the Penguins coming off a Stanley Cup, the Capitals really going into their last best chance to win a Stanley Cup, the drama going into a series would be greater than it was even last year. And you kind of hope with the Capitals and Penguins that it's not a second-round series, that the Penguins somehow slip into that wild card spot where the Rangers are now, and switch over to the and cross over into the Atlantic Division. If that's a Capitals Penguins Eastern Conference final, Sid and Malkin against Obi and Backstrom, the Capitals getting older, Capitals knowing change is coming, and you're right, the Penguins have now loaded up. If they get healthy, especially on defense going into the playoffs, you know nobody's repeated since in the Cap era and for a long, long time. But the Penguins would be a threat to do it, and the Capitals on paper. Tyler Seguin said this to me yesterday. I don't think there's any team in the league as good on paper as the Capitals. But they also have the playoff history that we all know very well from the last decade to deal with.
We're joined by Stephen Wino, national hockey writer for the Associated Press on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline on TSN 1290. You just mentioned Tyler Seguin and the Dallas Stars. You wrote about that game last night, the Dallas Stars snapping that Washington Capitals home winning streak. The Dallas Stars have now won two games in a row. As you know, Stephen, they were big-time sellers prior to the NHL trade deadline. They're now 5 points behind the St. Louis Blues for that last playoff spot, so they've got some work still to do, but are you prepared to say that the Dallas Stars have quietly maybe crept back into the playoff race here?
Not yet. Not quite yet. Just because you're not really sure. Look at that Western Conference. You're not really sure where to draw the line between teams that are in the race and teams that are out of the race. I mean, the Jets, having traded Drew Stafford, are still in striking distance in that race. The Stars, having traded Johnny Oduya and Lauri Korpikoski and sold at the deadline, also in the race. But are the Canucks in it? The Canucks are right on the verge of right on the heels of where the Stars are now with a game in hand, and I wouldn't say Vancouver's in it. The Stars haven't won three consecutive games more than once this season. If they win three in a row, if they beat Ottawa tomorrow, if they're all of a sudden putting together, stringing wins together, if Kari Lehtinen plays the way he played at Florida and at Washington, I'd be willing to consider it. And Patrick Sharp knows that. Patrick Sharp said last night, I'm not sure a lot of people would put us in the playoff race. And I wouldn't yet, just because I think St. Louis with Jake Allen will get it back together. I think it'll be okay. The Kings are a challenge, a legitimate challenger there, with or without Ben Bishop, with or without Jerome Iginla. That talk to me in a week or so when we've got maybe 12 games to go for the Dallas Stars and see where they are at that point.
Steven, I want to focus again last night, Washington and Dallas, a really, really uncharacteristic turnover by Nicholas Backstrom, one of the premier passers around the league. You know, he showed his true character after the game. He owned up to it. He said that it was on him, a sloppy play, whatnot. Does this guy continue just to impress based just his character and how he's able to drive the play with the Caps? And just, like, you know, how important is Nicholas Backstrom just for this team's composition?
Very important. And I remember back when Bruce Boudreau coached his team, he used the old Reggie Jackson line. He's the straw that stirs the drink. He is what makes the Capitals go. And Alex Ovechkin is Alex Ovechkin. He is always a team's MVP, as he should be. Braden Holtby is an all-star, Vezina Trophy winner. But I don't know where this team would be without Nicholas Backstrom. There has been some whispers. Isabel Cricchiuti from the Washington Post wrote about him potentially being a Hart Trophy contender. I don't think he's that. I wouldn't put him in my top five right now. But he's invaluable to the Capitals right now. I mean, Evgeny Kuznetsov has been inconsistent all season, struggled particularly earlier in the year. Nicholas Backstrom is in the top 10 in the league in scoring. He makes Alex Ovechkin go. He makes that power play go. It's still a top five ranked power play in the league after some struggles earlier in the year. You're right. A terrific leader. Someone on the Capitals called him the unofficial captain of that team. Alex Ovechkin wears the C. Nicholas Backstrom is a very quiet, unassuming leader and a really good guy, a good kid to deal with, and probably one of the more underrated defensive centers and two-way centers in the league.
We're joined by our good friend Stephen Wino on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Stephen, the Las Vegas Golden Knights made their first signing yesterday, signing Brandon Wheatking's forward, Reed Duke, to a 3-year entry-level contract. Kelly McCrimmon, assistant general manager and owner, assistant general manager of the Las Vegas Golden Knights, but owner of the Brandon Wheatkings, obviously had some familiarity with Reed Duke. How many more signings do you think we're going to see before the late June expansion draft made by the Las Vegas Golden Knights? Is it going to be mainly unsigned college free agents, or is there maybe a possibility that we're going to see some other pro players signed by the Vegas team?
I think it's going to be a little bit of a mix. The college free agent pool this year is not deep. There isn't a whole lot of top end talent there. And Vegas is going to have to go up against that 50 contract limit. They're going to have 30 contracts coming from the expansion draft. And depending on whether they get a full AHL team for next season, it's going to depend on how many guys they get to sign or have to sign for that team. But I don't think they're going to load up. I don't think this is going to be a 10, 12 guys before the expansion draft in June. And I don't think Jordan Spieth is a rush on that. He gets a chance now to talk to his fellow GMs, talk trade about who to take, who not to take in the expansion draft, who might be left unprotected, who's definitely going to be protected, who's going to cost some assets for teams that I think you could go fishing for back in the junior ranks to get a handful of guys who were drafted and maybe unsigned like Reed Dupe was after being a Minnesota Wild draft pick. And obviously Kelly McCrimmon, as you mentioned, has familiarity with a kid like this. That's probably where you're looking. And what the Golden Knights do have is a very vast scouting staff, pro and amateur. Beyond anything else that George McPhee has done, he has hired a strong, deep staff of scouts. Basically, any NHL game you see now has at least someone from Vegas there. And they're also scouting the junior ranks. George McPhee and company were at the World Junior Tournament. They've left no stone unturned in terms of being able to build up young talent, because a lot of the talent they're going to have available in the expansion draft, those first and second year pros are not going to be available to them. So they're going to need to build through the draft and make shrewd moves now among undrafted and unsigned college and junior players to be able to build up a prospect base.
Steven, should we expect George McPhee to announce the new head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights anytime soon, or do you wait till the season's over and then make that decision?
I think they're going to wait, and speaking with him recently, he said he's not in a rush on that either, just because you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season and which coaches are going to be available. It's pretty clear that George McPhee, after he never got a chance to really do it in Washington, wants to hire an experienced head coach. And already there are guys out of work, Gerard Gallant, Jack Capuano being the main two. George McPhee knows Jack Capuano from his time working with Gar Snow on the island, likes Jack Capuano, and I think he'd have a good chance. But if Lemmy Russ gets fired in Dallas, if Paul Maurice for some reason gets fired in Winnipeg, if John Cooper gets fired in Tampa, none of those are sure things. But if those guys are available, you have to consider George McPhee wants to at least talk to them. And there's no rush now with Capuano or with Gerard Gallant or anyone else out there, someone like Ralph Kruger who's Southampton Football Club over in England. There's not a hurry. David Poile went when he ran Nashville, hired Barry Trotz from the start. Barry Trotz was in on every move from the beginning. George McPhee already had Kelly McCrimmon as his right-hand man there to kind of put an identity of a team together. But come May and come June, I think you'd like to have a coach in place, whether it's Jack Capuano or someone else, for the expansion draft, just so he has an idea of what kind of team he's going to have on the ice.
Steven, finally, Olli Jokinen signs a one-day contract with the Florida Panthers today, retires as a Panther where he says his heart was for his entire career. I'm curious, just, it's always fun to talk about players when they retire on these days like today. How do you feel the Big Finn will be remembered for his time in the NHL?
A very respectable career. I mean, I got a very brief chance to cover Olli Jokinen when the St. Louis Blues traded him to the Toronto Maple Leafs a couple of years ago at the deadline. Really, he got traded from a contender to a team that was playing out the string and handled it about as well as anyone could have handled it in that situation. A veteran who clearly would have loved to win a Stanley Cup at that stage of his career. He wasn't going to win it with the Maple Leafs. He was a guy who was very looked up to in that room, dealt with a very difficult situation with a guy who had coached him before in Peter Horacek. He was a good soldier in a bad situation. Very respectable guy, a good leader, somebody who young players really was a mentor. I know a lot of guys at that part of their career don't want to do that. He was willing to take it. He never took a shift off in that situation in Toronto. A very respectable and good career for Olli Jokinen.
Steven Wino, national hockey writer for the Associated Press. He's a frequent guest on the show, and we always appreciate when you give us your time, Steven. I'm sure we'll catch up with you either before the playoffs or once the playoffs have begun. So have a great night, and thanks again for joining us.
Thanks very much. Enjoy the stretch run, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Steven.
All right, let's head to break. We've got one final segment. You know what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens, Sean, and Carey Price. He's hot again. You're listening.
My fantasy goalie.
That's right. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. One final segment here on NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. And it's brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. We're going to spend the final 8 or 9 minutes here, Sean, talking about Carey Price, who has been absolutely red hot. I don't know if you saw that he was named the third star of the week yesterday. Since the coaching change that saw Claude Julien come in and replace Michel Therrien, Carey Price has a record of 5-2-0, 945 save percentage. He's currently on a 4-game winning streak, during which he has only allowed 4 goals. And he has a 964 save percentage. It's unbelievable the way he's playing right now. The Montreal Canadiens and Vancouver Canucks play tonight. By the way, I wanted to mention the St. Louis Blues are up 1-0 on the Minnesota Wild after one, so I know a lot of Jets fans aren't going to be happy to hear that. So we're going to hope that maybe the Minnesota Wild score a couple of goals and win tonight to help out the Jets. The Jets are currently 3 points behind the Blues. And the Blues have 3 games in hand. Yeah. So after tonight, Sean, the Blues will only have 2 games in hand. But again, the Blues are up 1-0. So hopefully the Wild can tie that game up and, again, make Jets fans a little bit happier. Back to Carey Price here for a second, though, Sean. The way he's playing as of late and with the moves the Montreal Canadiens made, so bringing in Jordy Benn, bringing in Brandon Davidson, bringing in Andreas Martensson from the Colorado Avalanche, bringing in big bad Dwight King from the Los Angeles Kings, a guy who's 6'2", 220 pounds. The way Price is playing right now, and as I said, with those moves, does this change your outlook for the Montreal Canadiens? Do you think the Montreal Canadiens can go far in the playoffs, or do you still think that the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals, maybe throw in the New York Rangers, are those teams still the favorites in the East?
Yeah, I think because of the ebbs and flows of the season for Montreal, you know, the highs and the lows, it's going to be a really, really interesting postseason. I mean, you have to say that these established teams that have continued to roll throughout the year, like the Rangers, the Penguins, that they are the favorites, right? Just because you don't really know if this is an aberration of just maybe hitting the reset button and, you know, these guys are riding the adrenaline of a new coach and maybe some new roster players. It's going to be interesting, and if they can, you know, when you're just reading off those numbers to me from Carey Price, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, it's usually par for the course. It's weird when he struggles. It seems unnatural. So if they can continue to play the style of hockey that they're playing now, you know, they apparently are rejuvenated. Everyone's smiling. Everyone wants to play for each other, feeling great. Then, yeah, like we were talking about the Florida Panthers last time I was on the show, dangerous team entering the postseason.
Yeah, and you got to throw the Lightning in there, yeah. Right? Steven Waino touched on the Tampa Bay mm-hmm. Lightning. And Mike Holford also touched on the Tampa Bay Lightning.
A lot of people talking about Tampa Bay right now.
It's the Lightning and the Panthers that the Islanders have to look out for. And no offense to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but the Toronto Maple Leafs are not in the same class as the Lightning or the Panthers. Mm-hmm. And that's just because they don't have the same defensive makeup. They don't have the goaltending depth or the forward depth, quite frankly. So the Panthers and the Lightning are going to be two teams to watch in the East. You know, going back to the Montreal Canadiens here, though, Sean, I think it's an interesting point you make about, you know, that coaching change and personnel change and how that can really give a boost to a team.
You see it quite often, right? You see them kind of, the reset button happens and then these guys are kind of riding the high and they don't want to, you know, they want to look better in front of their new coach and everyone wants to play the best. And
if you see where, you know, the Montreal Canadiens think they can go, I mean, they might be primed for a long playoff run because, as you mentioned, you know, Carey Price's numbers actually weren't that bad prior to Michel Therrien being fired. It was actually just his PK save percentage that was really poor, and the Montreal Canadiens had a poor PK, mm-hmm. still do have a poor PK. It's getting a little bit better, but you look at Carey Price's numbers on the year, 2.31 goals against average, 922 save percentage. I mean, his save percentage is still above the league average. So you'd expect his save percentage to be closer to 930 just because he's Carey Price, former Hart Trophy and Vezina winner. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he's had a bad season. He just hasn't had the spectacular season that we're used to. So I agree with you. The one other thing I wanted to mention about the Montreal Canadiens that I think is truly impressive, that proves that Claude Julien truly is one of the great coaches in the game, is that in 2 weeks as head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. He's already got the shots against down 2 shots a game, and you wouldn't think that that was that much, but really, in today's standards, that really is a lot to have that type of impact. And, it, you know, he gets a lot of credit for his defensive system that really made the Boston Bruins such a good team year after year, a team that could make the playoffs and really contend for the Stanley Cup, especially going back to the year that they won it. But he has really made this team more difficult to play against. And you know that Claude Julien told Marc Bergevin before he decided to sign on with the Montreal Canadiens for the second time that he wanted to get bigger, tougher, and he wanted to change the way this team played. Because you look at, you know, a guy like Brendan Gallagher, he struggled. And he's starting to put the puck in the net. A guy like Paul Byron, he's starting to score a little bit more. They were too heavily reliant on basically two or three players, Alex Radulov and Max Pacioretty.
Alex Galchenyuk kind of Alex up, Galchenyuk, up and down.
That's a key, things. Right? I mean, Alex Galchenyuk, that is the guy who you know is now your number one center. Thomas Plekanec, he's towards the end of his career.
Yeah, back
nine. He's been struggling, right? Mm-hmm. He hasn't had a good year. I think he's only got something like 24 points.
7 goals.
It's incredible. I mean, this is a guy that used to put in 20 goals on the reg, right? So
he's got one more point than Andrew Shaw. So put that into perspective. And Andrew Shaw is a very, very serviceable player, but
that's a guy who you want to have on your team come playoff time with his Stanley Cup pedigree,
big
right?
Big time, big time. That guy, he's been bred in a culture of winning, Andrew Shaw.
To your point about the Stanley Cup contenders in the East, though, Sean, for me, it's still Washington and Pittsburgh, and I wouldn't underestimate the New York Rangers. But when you have Carey Price as your goaltender, and right now, I mean, the top goaltenders in the game, most of them are in the East. And, you know, with the exception of, you know, let's be honest, Devan Dubnyk, Corey Crawford, and you could throw in a few others there. Martin Jones is having a great year, but Braden Holtby, Matt Murray, I think Marc-Andre Fleury is still an excellent goaltender, but Henrik Lundqvist, Sergei Bobrovsky just had a couple shutouts, right? I mean, the elite goaltenders in the league, almost all of these teams right now in the top 4 or 5 in the Eastern Conference have a top goaltender, right? Mm-hmm. So, and we know that Carey Price, when it comes to the big games, he can play better than anybody. He's got 2 Olympic golds to prove it. So I think this bodes very well for this Montreal Canadiens team, who's been very up and down. After starting the season 13-1-1, they were a 500 team until they decided to fire Michel Therrien and bring in Claude Julien. So very impressive what Carey Price has done here. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Montreal Canadiens can do, because you have the Ottawa Senators playing very well right now.
Yeah, big time.
And with the exception of that last wild card spot, most of the teams in the East are the playoff teams are set, right? We know the Boston Bruins, barring an unforeseen collapse, they're getting in. We know that the Rangers, the Pens, the Capitals, and the Habs are getting in. So it's really a question of, can the Leafs, Panthers, or Lightning really overtake the Islanders for that last playoff spot? So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here with the Habs, because I think there are a lot of expectations, and if this team gets out in the first round, I think a lot of people are going to be questioning whether Marc Bergevin should be the guy to steer the ship going forward, right?
Yeah, regardless of whether he's hiding behind a plant or not.
Exactly. All right, Sean, that's going to do it for another edition of NHL This Week. Want to thank our guest tonight, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. Joined us Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review and Mike Halford of NBC Pro Hockey Talk and Curtin Blog Radio on TSN 1040 Radio. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Keener Jerseys, Linden Market Dental Center, and Zappia Group Realty. For Sean Assor, I'm Ezra Ginsberg. Big thanks to Rory McGoran. We'll see you next week on NHL This Week.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.